Quietly just grab one. Start. Yeah, start.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to investor presentation of Fedora Wedding Limited. Today, we are joined by our MD in the center, who is left is Mr. Bhide. He is the head of HR, company secretary, legal, and admin. Who is right, we have Mr. Suryakant Sethia. He's our CFO. So we'll start by our little presentation by our MD.
Put the presentation up. Hi, good evening, everyone. We have a short presentation which just gives a bit of an overview about the business for last year, talks a little bit about us and the market and the amalgamation stuff that has happened last week. I'll try and run through the presentation very quickly and then leave it open for questions after that. This is a disclaimer standard. Addo Group overview for those who are attending for the first time and are not aware, we do this every time during the investor presentation. Started in 1908, JB Advani & Co. Then these are all the different group companies that exist that encompass the group and the different things that comprise our business activities. Most of this is available at addogroup.com. An overview of the performance of last year. As you can see, the main buckets of business are the welding consumables, the welding equipment and automation, and the flares and process equipment division. Numbers are part of our segment results, and an overview is provided over here. PBT and return on capital employed, again, without exceptional items, with exceptional items tracking over the last 4 or 5 years, as have been the question by most of our shareholders, is what we're looking at, and that data has been provided as well. This was something I talked of in last year. I think last time we did this meeting, I think it was October. When did we do it? In June last year. In June last year. We haven't had a chance to do it since. It was something that we had highlighted, which were these three important metrics, which we had felt the 2 or 3 years preceding had sort of gone out of control for a business like ours. So if you look at the working capital in terms of number of days, we've managed to bring that down to 69, which is a little more along the lines of where we want to be. We peaked out our borrowing sometime in October of 2020 or November of 2020. It had gone all the way up to approximately 120 crores. We managed to bring that down to zero by March 22. We will, of course, have a little bit of debt moving up and down. It's not like it's only going to be zero. We will have a little bit of debt moving throughout. But the idea is that we believe it doesn't have to be a very significant borrowing at this time, especially for any organic requirements. Debt to equity ratio naturally, obviously, comes down accordingly. FY22 performance, I think this is pretty standard information in terms of the tonnage growth that we had over the previous years. All of that is provided. And also in terms of volume growth on our equipments, most of which is manufactured internally rather than imported, is also provided over here. The FPED, which is, if you remember, this used to be called the Project Engineering Business Division, and we had lots of issues with past projects and Kuwait and stuff like that. We re-changed the entire way we work. We focus only on flares and process equipment right now. Rebranded, re-changed the entire division, structured, rebranded. Change of management, all of that has been done. And we stopped off only a focus on flares and process equipment, not doing jobs that were not adequate value addition by virtue of engineering. So we started that exercise a year and a half ago. And just to give you an overview, last year we did 27 crores at pretty much almost a break even. Whereas if you look at the previous year's sales, even though the revenues might be higher, if you look at the true results, they're astoundingly bad in terms of the bottom line. Going forward, we are expecting this to get stronger and stronger. I'm very happy with the progress the team is making, the direction they're going in terms of selecting the right engineered projects, the right return on capital, as well as the margin. So this will step by step keep having an improvement as we go forward. Just to give you a general overview in our focus areas, there's a lot of, we have identified a lot of plans over the next 12 to 24 months, maybe even a slightly longer in terms of technology upgradation that needs to be done. There is a lot of scope of improvement over here. We will have to undertake over the next 2 to 3 years in different stages. We will have to undertake significant investments in upgrading our technologies, especially on the welding consumables front. Distribution is something that remains the core of Ador, and we have to keep strengthening that, especially looking at the benefits of the merger in that regard as well. Online sales is picking up, is becoming a very interesting platform on a B2B level. There are a lot of interesting portals that we are working with, and I think that's also an area that we have to be smart about how we handle going forward. Ador International, with supply chains undergoing massive shifts that you all are all aware about, with sentiment regarding manufacturing countries changing, with India becoming a little more visible and much more competitive, there's tremendous opportunity here. We have had an operation or a setup in the Middle East for quite some time, our own office in Sharjah, our distribution network. However, about a year ago, we decided that, look, it's time that we scale this in a very different way. And that's what we've done. We've hired new talent, good talent, brought them in from MNCs, global MNCs who know that part of the world, how it operates. We're upping our brand game, our investments over here as well. And we're starting to see results. It'll take a little time, but we're starting to see results. And I think the opportunity here is to grow multifold. Product mix is a big part of going ahead. If you look at our competitors' results, you'll always notice the profitability, which is always a concern for me, that we are not able to do it. And that's a essence of product mix that we have to keep improving upon. It's a never-ending process, and the team is working towards that. Made in India, you all know that that's a priority for all manufacturing companies in India. And BIS, Bureau of Indian Standards approval, is becoming more and more relevant. So there's a lot of work being done by technical teams, whether it's on the research side, on process side, all of that to keep strengthening our game plan over here. IT systems is not only necessarily ERP related, it's actually IT systems in the way we do order processing and management with our distribution networks. I think there's a lot of potential to change the game over there, and we're going to keep working at that to become more efficient in that regard. Fairly standard information regarding our clientele. Lastly, the last point I wanted to cover was the recent news. Last week, we had a board meeting where we decided to amalgamate Ador Welding and Ador Fontech. We will be taking most of the Ador Fontech stuff during the analyst call Thursday. However, from the Ador Welding perspective, any questions are there, you can ask. Just to give you an overview where we stand, as far as Ador Welding and Ador Fontech are concerned, in terms of what we visualize as welding, cutting, and complementary businesses that have a lot of synergies, is approximately 96% of Ador Welding's business and approximately 84% of Ador Fontech's business. So that goes to show how much synergy there can be if done correctly. There are two elements, the wear products on the Ador Fontech side, as well as the flares and process equipment on the Ador Welding side, in which they have a limited role and they have limited overlap benefits, but they will still stand on its own going forward. Even in the other wear products, actually, Ador Welding's distribution will help to accelerate that as well. Value creation, a fairly standard slide of what we aim to do for shareholders, to enhance the brand and market value of the company through a broader sales and deeper market sales and service network, distributor and customers being utilized more effectively, more optimal use of manufacturing, and logistics and creating the best experience in terms of providing support into the network are all things that will be part of bringing this value creation going forward. So very standard slide on why merge. This was discussed for a long time at the board. We've debated this. We've gone through it and tried to understand why exactly are we merging, and have to have complete clarity on it. Brand. I harp about this in both analyst meetings, in AGMs, anywhere that the Ador brand is very strong, and I feel undersold. And I feel by combining these two, the Ador brand can leverage that. The rest of the stuff, distribution, manpower, infrastructure, financial capability is all fairly standard. You'll all know this as any two companies would merge, especially being part of the same group, that these benefits will accrue. Portfolio of products, services, and solutions. This is actually quite interesting because Contech has a very unique basket of products that if combined correctly with the welding distribution and sales system can be used quite effectively. Similarly, for partnerships and alliances that can be built over this. The focus for the merger to work is based on customer experience, distribution, synergies, and R&D. And we'll go into more detail on that as you guys have any questions. We now leave it open for question and answers. I think there's a standard request that two or three questions per participant in a certain order that Shreesh will call out. If you have more questions, we request you just hold on so everyone has a chance. I request not to have a repetitive question as well. And whatever we can answer as best possible, we will go ahead. So thank you very much. You can now stop sharing. Yeah. All right, Shreesh, you can go ahead. Thanks. Don't just leave it on one thing. Just push it back. Go ahead. Start. Go ahead.
Mr. Rahul Jain, you are being unmuted now. Please ask your questions.
Hello, am I audible?
Yeah, Mr. Jain, go ahead.
Thanks for this call and thanks for the commentary. So, firstly, on the consumable side, sir, with regards to our margins, it's almost more than now about 15, 18 months since you have joined and you have been working on various initiatives with regards to improvement in our margins. So the observation is on the consumable side, till December 20, we were roughly doing EBIT margins in consumable segment of around 15%. And post that, it's been around 8 to 9, 10%, 11%. So in what time frame do we expect to be back to around 15% margins in the consumable segment? That is my first question, sir.
Ask your next question. Finish your question, sir. Then I'll reply to each one of them one by one. Go ahead.
Sure. And then with regards to exports, in our previous interactions, you've been always talking about exports as being a big growth driver going ahead. So with regards to the FY22 numbers on Ador Welding, what kind of export numbers we have ended with and how do we look at the export segment for the coming FY23 and FY24? This is the second one. And last one, if you could just dwell upon the overall demand scenario, how is it looking today? Which sectors are doing well for us? And which are the sectors where you see potential? And thereby, how do we see growth going ahead? Thank you so much.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Jain. Okay, let's go. Consumers margins is something that is a non-stop, something we discuss almost every day. And it's not been easy from a learning curve perspective because of the volatility we've seen in steel prices, because of certain rate contracts we had. All of that, the ability to pass through, when to pass through, how to pass through, see the demand cycle. I mean, if you were to just look at, for me, just for Jan, Feb, March, April, May, just these 5 months have their own learning curve to it. And it's taking a little bit of time. We are improving. It has to do with product mix and it has to do with reading of the market correctly. And my simple answer to you here is month on month, we are trying to make small improvements. And I think you will see it. The volatility doesn't help, but it is very much a part of what we want to do. I can't give you a date by when we want to get back to 15%, but I can rest assure you that that is very much the plan that we are working on. It will take a little time. We're already seeing a slight improvement. And then you had steel prices fly down the way they have in the last 2 months. That doesn't help either. So, you got to keep managing the entire thing carefully. I've always said that ESAB is better than us at that and we have to learn. We'll keep doing it. We'll get there. Exports is a very big growth driver. I think last year we closed exports at 33 crores. We've made the changes we have and the talent we've got, everything like that has come in only on 1st April. I expect them to grow the business very significantly in the region of 35-40% year on year for a few years. In fact, over time, in a multiple factor over the next 3 or 4 years, and I think they're well set up to do that. It'll be a tremendous growth driver, not only in the Middle East. There's also parts of Europe that we can enter. There are other parts also. Things are changing dynamically, and we have to be well set up to do it. Demand scenario is a very interesting question, all depending on the week. Right now, demand has been good. It was okay in April. It was kind of weak in May, as you guys will know this better than I do. It's been weak in May, but again in June, we're seeing it sort of coming back. So it's encouraging signs from the first week of June. Steel prices are what steel prices are. You all have seen it. I think everyone was holding off a bit. Stocking was taking, people were slowing down. You can't really do that much fabrication at those price levels when things have gone up and material costs the way they had. In general, demand, what's strong and good about demand is equipment, which is capital-oriented, capex-oriented. We have seen that to be good in May also. We have seen that to be good. So that means projects are there, things are there. I think people were just holding off purchases a little bit. All in all, I think demand will be good. I don't see the exuberance of Q4 simply because of the stocking levels that were happening at that time in anticipation of price increase. But I do see demand to be fairly decent. I hope that answers your question. Despite a small little lull for a few weeks in the middle, I see it picking up to be fairly decent.
Thank you so much, sir, and wish you all the best.
Thank you. So, go ahead.
Mr. Pritesh, you are now unmuted. Kindly ask your questions.
Thank you for the opportunity. Just wanted to check one thing on the steel price. Now with the steel price correcting a lot, this lag effect in your margins, when should it start being visible based on the stocking, etc., that you would have done? What is the capacity utilization of your factories? You have put out a certain investment plan in automation, in IT system upgrades. So what will be your capex and this dividend payout that we see of 30%? Can it be sustainable? And my last question is, where are we in terms of the consolidation of the factories and this margin gap with ESAP, of about 300 to 400 basis point based on year to year, let's say this year, your number and ESAP's number, where and how can this be bridged?
Okay, thanks for this. Very quickly, manufacturing capacity utilization in April was okay. In Q4 was very good. In Q4 it was very good. And when I say very good, it means it's somewhere in the region of 90% we were running in, at least in terms of our wires, at least 60-75% in terms of electrodes. The equipment was running at somewhere in the region of 60-70%. Equipment has continued to run at 60-70% through April and May. May has become quiet. May was a little quiet. June early part is a little bit quiet in terms of capacity utilization of consumables, like I mentioned earlier. But I expect it to pick back up by July, whatever signs we are seeing. IT systems are not very, very expensive, easily manageable. The sort of systems we're creating are well within the capex that we would do normally, very comfortably within. So it's not really going to be a big detriment. In fact, we're trying something quite different. So let's see how that works. Definitely, I think a dividend payout ratio is something that I wanted to establish as a new base. I was very keen to. It wasn't a one-time thing. And look, as I said, volatility aside, that's the way we looked at it and said that if we're going to do it, it should be something that starts becoming consistent and built up from here. So I do expect that to come irrespective of the capex. I think the company's borrowing ability, the company's ability to leverage its financial resources, all of that is adequate to still do this dividend payout without having any major implication. Margin gap. Which, as I told Mr. Jain, look, we are working in it time and time. There's a lot of stuff ESAP does well when it comes to product mix, when it comes to all of that. And we are doing it step by step. It's not something I can bridge tomorrow morning. But I think, as I said, you'll keep seeing quarter on quarter, you will keep noticing a slight improvement. That's the only way to do it. I don't know any other way to do it. But quarter on quarter, you will see an improvement happening.
Consolidation of factories, where are
consolidation of factories? Sorry, I missed that point. Consolidation of factories, we were going to do a consolidation of factories. And a few months ago, I put a halt to it, which I could not discuss publicly because of the merger. So any plans that I'm, because of the merger, I wanted to relook at everything altogether more holistically. And that is going to take a few months.
So anything we do will have an impact on the on based on the fact that now we're merging. So we have to look at it from that perspective. I think that makes more sense from the long run also. So it'll take a little time. The plan is very much on. It'll take a little more time.
And that steel price fall and with what lag does it benefit your margin?
No, it's not. It's not so simple. When demand drops the way it has, it's not simple. It's different. If demand hadn't dropped, if you send steel price drop in May, whatever you've seen, any data, at least whatever I've seen, the drop in demand was severe. So it's not like you were passing on regular demand and you're like, okay, I'll price up down like this and I'll do it. The demand and drop was severe, but in June it's picked back up. So you have a lag of about a month, I would say. That's always what we've held up. And in Q4 of last year, we were good at passing prices through, except for a few rate contracts that we had a tough time with. That's why you see the margins improve in Q4. I hear it's about a one month drop. We have some inventories, obviously, everyone will be sitting on, not only us. But you're being a little staggered in terms of sorting out. But we also saw one or two decent months. So I think I expect the quarter to average out around what would be a normal quarter.
Lastly, on your comment on demand, you grew 30% in volume in the consumable space in FY22. All indicators or other companies that we've spoken to on capital goods side talk about robust, you know, order backlog, a lot of capex is being happening. So do you see a situation where you would consistently grow about a 20%+ volume growth over the next couple of years?
I would definitely hope so. I don't think I can answer that without IIP data. Look, it's great. It's well and great to have that sort of projection as long as IIP projections follow that. But it's the volatility you've seen in the last few months and what is expected to come up forward, I can't predict. I can only tell you that we are striving for it, we're aiming for it, but the market has to be able to accept it and deliver on it. Everyone can want 20% volume growth, but the reality is, in Q3 last year, if you ask me, or in Q4 this year, you ask me, I'd say yes, 20% looks like it. But then you look at April and May and what's happening globally. And it's not only a welding thing, it's not only us. So I don't think I can comment on 20%, 30%. I can only tell you that I can work within a certain plus factor of what the market will do. And that's our aim. So our aim is always to outgrow the market at the right pace and to do it while ensuring these margins are correct. So the IIP data, you know, is something we have to keep looking at.
But just to sneak in here, at least the business scenario is much better than what it was for the last 7-8 years.
It remains much better. Even June, as I said, after literally from 31st May 1st, June, things are looking more up. So, yeah. And it was like a 2-week lull, 2-3 week lull, which is, as I said, not unique to us, at least not that I know of. I'd say definitely. We remain very confident that we'll be able to do well. It's just the inflationary effect and stuff like that that you have to keep in mind. Look, at the end of the day, last year you have growth. Every company has growth, which is inflationary growth also. So that has to be looked at, right? That has to be always kept in mind that inflationary growth will go away and it'll just be a standard sort of real growth.
Yeah, that's why I asked you the volume growth number. I never asked you the revenue growth.
Yeah, thanks.
And what is the capex you will spend for 23 and 24?
I have a ballpark estimate, but it's going to be a little more revision based on the merger. It's going to be decent size, but I need to do a little more homework on that and come back. As of now, you can expect it to be anywhere within 30-40% about within a 20-30% band of what we've done over the last 2-3 years. But I do expect over the next 3 months, based on the merger, that I will revamp all of this stuff and come back with a 3-year plan that might be slightly higher. But as I keep talking about capex in our regard, the two things. When you're talking about anything to do with manufacturing rejig, it has to do with, because you're rejigging land, we have enough land assets that it's easy to do that rejig. When you're talking about buying new technologies, that's a separate part, and that's what I'm evaluating also. But I don't expect it to be anything astronomically absurd in terms of the technology purchase either.
Thank you very much, and all the best to you.
Thanks.
Mr. Shimba, you are now being unmuted. Kindly ask
your
questions.
Sir, I have a couple of questions that historically we have been doing regularly the capex, and this year also we have done quite a bit of capex. But if you look at our competitors, they don't need to do much of the capex. Can you put some light on this? That is it you specifically or the industry is not needing anything on that?
Sure. You have any other questions before I answer that?
Answer like we have been doing the like in the previous year we have been doing the capex like ahead also. Can you give us any guidance that what areas are you looking to do the capex and all?
Okay, so first of all, I cannot comment too much on our competitors. I can only tell you this: we are the largest manufacturer of welding equipment and potentially of consumables, if I am not mistaken, in the country. A lot of our competitors buy and trade from abroad, within here, do all of that. We tend to make and we tend to get rewarded for that, and we're improving on it. I tend to think that there's a lot of scope for improvement on that. In fact, if you look at welding equipment data, 95% or 96% of welding equipments in the country are imported. We're the largest manufacturer by a mile. So there's always going to be some element of capex that we do that others don't do. And I think the game's changing, which is going to favor this in the long term. So I think it's worth that long-term play. There is technology upgradation that is different for each company. Our capex will require a bit of that going forward as well. You asked for a guidance on capex. As I said, what I answered to Tesh also is I can't do much at the moment. They're two separate parts of capex. There's one that is investing in the rejig of manufacturing, which is land-based or whatever you might want to call it. And the second is technology upgradation. I need 3-4 months to figure those two out, but I don't expect them to be on a year-on-year basis much more than like a 30%, 40% of what we've done as an average upside.
And sir, can you give us a ballpark figure on the sectoral dependency percentage? Like from which sector you get how much revenue and that?
Look, general infra, general projects, heavy engineering, project engineering, that sort of stuff will account for 40-50% of the business. Railways, 5-6%, shipbuilding, defense, 5-6%, auto, probably 10%, but even though auto is down, but auto in terms of value is not very high, more in terms of volume. Oil and gas definitely has a big role to play. I'd say 6-8% maybe, depending, especially if they're doing expansionary work, then at that time it picks up a little bit more. Core sectors pretty much on that account.
Okay, sir. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. Ankit Gupta, you are now unmuted. Kindly ask your question.
Thanks for the opportunity and congratulations to Aditya and team for successfully turning around the operations. At all levels, in terms of sales, balance sheet and dividend payout, after we stopped paying dividend last year. Aditya, on the equipment side, we have been highlighting that margins on the equipments are in fact higher than even consumables in a steady state environment. But I think we have been facing some challenges in terms of imports and higher freight cost. So if you can talk about how is the demand on equipment side and, when can we revert back to, let's say mid-teens kind of EBITDA margins in equipments. That was on the equipment side. Secondly, there have been certain areas where you have been trying to improve our distribution as well as sales. If we talk about eastern and southern geographies, where you have earlier highlighted that we would like to beef up our presence there and work more towards distributions and sales. So if you can talk about how are we trying to address those gaps and how do you see those gaps being addressed later. And lastly, on the consolidation benefits, if you can quantitatively really highlight some kind of consolidation, the benefits that you expect in the combined entity over the next 2-3 years. Thank you.
Equipment demand, as I mentioned, has remained fairly good through and through from the last 7-8 months. I've not really seen too much of a lull. Even in May, like I said, while steel had a lull, equipment demand has remained kind of good. Margins are simply a factor of, we have to keep, there's a huge import element that we're fighting against. And I think we have the ability to push higher margins because imports are going to get more costly, and the competition we face is slowly going to make life is going to be harder for them also. So I think step by step we can improve, and scale obviously has to come into that game as well. Nice for you to remember that East and South thing. That is something we have been working on. The key thing to do is to identify just a few. We've done probably two or three. We've identified pockets in those areas. I don't want to get into much detail, but we have identified two or three pockets, Central India, East India, where we have added, and we will keep adding. And that's also the benefit of of our distribution system now, that the two entities will be together. You get to work with some bigger stuff going forward. On the consolidation, look, I wish I have the numbers in our own back working. We've done a lot of stuff. I don't want to get into it today in terms of numbers because it could be a debate, and I don't want that to be the case. But I expect some significant benefits to come into both companies over the next 2 to 3 years. I don't want to get into numbers, guys. I'm sorry for that, but I need a little more time before I was to publicly get into the exact specific numbers of consolidation benefits or give a forecast out there. But I do expect there to be quite significant benefits going forward. And I think the benefits are more regarding value creation rather than just a cost cut benefit. I don't really see that as a big driver. I see the synergistic part playing a role, and we'll take it forward from there.
Yeah, thanks for that. So just one follow-up on the equipment side. How do you see this business scaling up for us over the next 2-3 years? You know, we had some pretty decent ambitions that, you know, last year also we saw very decent growth in this, and you had said that you plan to grow this to a, you know, significant business for us. So like currently, given how the demand is shaping over the next 2-3 years, can this business be a 150, 170 crore business for us?
Oh yeah, definitely it can. It should, very much should, and it very much can. And that's what the team is working towards. It's a question of, hey, is it 2 years or 3 years to get there, but definitely.
And steady state margins can be 15-16% in this?
Steady state margins, you can improve on steady state margins because there are a lot of fixed costs over there and all of that. So your margins should technically start moving up a little bit. It's also a question of this heavy import stuff that we have to keep moving on. I think you'll see an improvement over there. Team has to work hard on that. You have to do that. There's no choice on that. You also have supply chain issues, don't forget, on equipments. You know, what you guys hear and track on auto guys having supply chain issues, we have similar supply chain issues on welding equipments, which we're trying to deal with, tackle and all of that. And it'll come. But yes, I completely agree with what numbers you put out there.
Sure. Thank you, and wish you all the best.
Thanks.
Mr. Jitendra Pesha, you are now unmuted. Kindly ask your questions.
Hi, Aditya and team.
Hi.
So Aditya, the first question is on the flare business. So I think, we have come out of a bad patch, and now we are again trying to grow that business. And I think you mentioned in your opening remarks that you are very happy with the progress in terms of the kind of orders that we are taking and the ROC that it can generate. So in terms of looking at that business, FY23, we are looking at 50 crore, but are we wanting to scale that business up to say 100 crore with 10-12% kind of a margin? Is that the ballpark numbers that you guys are working with?
Yeah, I think ballpark, you got it right. It's about doing it in steps. The opportunity is tremendous right now in the market for all of these projects. It's about doing it step by step. I think exactly the numbers you gave is definitely something that's on our radar. Project to project basis, we can get there. As I keep saying, the stipulation has to be a good engineering product and a good, at the end of the day, good return on capital employed, margin, all of that, but definitely. And what your numbers you indicated are very much on the cards.
So it's going to be, some 15-20% ROC business. Is that a safe assumption to make?
What are we at right now? So 18-20%. Yeah, I think you're pretty much, yeah, okay, a little bit higher than where we are right now, but yeah, you're okay, fine, yeah.
Okay. So second question is on export, Aditya. So on export, we are fairly well present in Middle East, right? But you also alluded that there are some openings or opportunities in European market. Now there are already well-established guys like, SAAB, Lincoln. So how do we compete and gain market share there?
So the welding world works on approvals. If you want to be a high-end, or let's say not the cheapest guy in the room, if you want to be the guy that is well recognized as a brand and as a quality product, you have to work on approvals. Those approvals are two or threefold. They are related to your own manufacturing unit. And then there are things like a CE approval. I mean, like all of those sort of things play a role in terms of how you create a good product. So we're doing that step by step. We have some people giving us more and more factory approvals, then we get more and more products into CE approval. It'll take time. I wouldn't say Europe is like my, you know, we have to go to Europe and that'll solve our problems. It's not. I'm just saying the inquiries also coming to us out of Europe are much higher than before, simply because of what's happening with supply chain disruption and what's happened with steel and China and all those other great things. As a focus in terms of the Ador International, what their focus is on the Middle East, parts of Africa, and these connects that might come. But it's not our job to do excess business development in those markets for exactly the reasons you said, that well-established becomes hard. But we are seeing a lot more traction come our way. Now, conversion of that traction will take time, approvals, all of that will take a little time. But we're seeing a lot more of that come our way.
Okay.
I don't expect that to be... So let me clarify for you, because I may have misspoken it when I did earlier. I don't expect that to be the answer for the international division. I expect that to be the icing on top and something that gives us a kicker. But as far as the team is concerned, their drive is Middle East and Africa to deliver numbers that we want are very possible from there.
Got it. So essentially what we are looking at is that India focused business with some 20% kind of a contribution coming from export in the overall revenue pie. That is how are we looking at our
what timeline are you looking at? 20% is going to take a little bit of time to get there, but yeah, you're right. That's the timeline that, I mean, if you were to look at a 3-4 year period, yeah, sure.
Okay. Great.
Yeah. Maybe 15, 18% maybe better.
Okay. Great. Thanks. Thanks. All the best.
Thank you.
Mr. Kaushik Mehta, you are unmuted now. Kindly ask
your
question.
Yeah, hi, Aditya.
Hi.
Thanks a lot for hosting this call. Aditya, if you can talk about, if I look at the margins for Fontech, I mean, you said that we have an 84% overlap with the products. But if I look at Fontech's margin, at least over the last couple of years, they've significantly improved to 14-15%, 14-16% actually in 22.
Yeah.
And so why is there such a difference in margins when there is like 86% overlap in products?
So just to be clear, to clarify that, you have to go into more micro detail. On a broad base level, there's an 84% overlap, but their product mix that they sell is, and the market that they cater to is much more specialized, which allows that margin to happen. But it's sold through fairly similar channels and fairly similar end users. But the applications are different, which is why their issue at Fontech, which I keep getting asked, is the scalability question, because it's niche based on that margin. On the welding front, the scalability is that much more, but you have the margin issue. So that's where it's at. That's what explains the difference that you have in these two.
So going forward, once these companies merge, it's fair to assume that a business which is one third of our business comes in at 14-16% margin, and our business is whatever 9-10%. So blended margins anyways goes up, and whatever improvement we can eke out of welding will keep accruing to us. That's a fair way to think about it.
I think you're very right. And if we don't do that, then we're failing in what we are planning to do, very much.
Right. If you can talk about the management structure, right? Mr. Ladwani runs Fontech. And so how will the management structure work out post this merger?
I don't want to get into excess detail right now because it's still very, very fresh. But I think we will have... it's the right way to answer this. I think... we'll be driving it the same way you're seeing it being driven today in terms of execution. I don't want to get into more detail on that, but
right.
I think Mr. Ladwani will definitely be there in the company, but I will be responsible for driving the bulk of the operations.
Thank you so much. And just one last thing, we also have one more company, Ador Multi Products, which is unlisted, right?
Oh, it's listed.
Yeah. That's not part of
the
margin? No, that's got nothing to do with welding. It's got nothing to do with welding. It's in the cosmetic space. It's a completely different business altogether.
Right. Whatever dividends that you have announced, 5 rupees for Fontech and 12.5 for welding, the merger will be post that balance sheet payout.
Yeah, yeah. No?
It's post that payout, no?
So payout will happen after the AGM.
Ah, so payout is now. Then merger has to go to NCLT and all that.
Merger takes longer.
Yeah, merger will take time. Yeah.
Thank you so much and best of luck, Aditya.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
you.
Hi. Firstly, I just want to thank you for the EPS accretive merger at a very attractive valuation. Secondly, I want to know whether Adore House in South Bombay is owned by Adore Welding or by the promoters.
So I'll give a very simple answer. It's I think there are approximately 6,000 square feet or something like that.
Two floors are owned by us.
Two floors are owned by Adore Welding. The rest is all owned by the holding company, JV Marvin Company.
So how many floors is it in total?
Five.
Yeah, with basement, it's five.
All right. And which floors are owned by Adore?
Guys, you can't get into these details. You'll have to take it offline. I'm sorry. This is more about Adore Welding's key operations. If there's something about an asset, which is like Adore House or something like that, if you want to send in your question in writing, we're happy to reply transparently on that. But I think most of this is about the welding business. So let's stick to that as much as possible.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Mr. Chera of Incred IMC, kindly ask your questions.
Yeah, hi. This is Aditya from Incred Asset Management. Hi. So you commented on capacity utilizations being higher. So just want to understand, for example, if you want to do an additional 20% capacity, how much time is required to bring the same, and do we have the land for further capacity expansion? And just a color on what asset turns should we build on the capacity expansions, CapEx.
So you see the last part again, a color on?
What are the asset turns to expect on the additional capacity? Which?
Let me clarify on capacity. Capacity when it comes to things like welding electrodes, which are the more high value part of the entire game, we don't have any capacity constraint at all. We have another 30-40% left. And plus more, depending on how we run the entire thing, that we're quite okay over there. We do general capacity improvements in terms of slightly faster machines, slightly changed over from an old machine, legacy system, all of that. So nothing of real concern. On the wire front, we keep adding. In fact, this year we've already added last year something. We keep adding that. My CapEx that I talk more is more from the technology perspective of the newer product lines, faster product lines, all of that. That'll take a little time and come in. In terms of asset turns, when you say, what do you mean? Cost we are increasing? I don't understand. Say that again.
How much we can generate additional revenue?
So additional revenue in terms of adding this CapEx?
Yeah.
So when you say you're going to add this CapEx, you could have about
more towards replacement.
It's more towards, no, that's the replacement part. But the new technology part that we're talking of adding will add at least somewhere in the region of what? It's a 2.5-3 year payback, most of it has. So I think accordingly we have to look at it. I don't have the exact answer, I'm sorry. But the new technology products that we're looking at have more or less a 2.5-3 year ROI that we're looking at in that regard. I hope that answers your question somewhat.
Yeah, that works. That's it.
Thank you.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity.
I can't hear you. Sorry, sir. You'll have to be a little louder.
Am I audible now?
Very soft.
1 minute. Is it better now?
Okay, go ahead. I'll try and hear you. We'll try. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So first question is more from the industry side with this Make in India and more focus towards Indian manufacturing. We are seeing a lot of product which are using welding are shifting towards Indian manufacturing instead of imports. At the same time, welding as an industry also depends a lot on the imported product which gets sold. So how do you see these things changing? Are we in a position to see a much higher growth Then vis-a-vis the IAP growth versus what we used to earlier peg the industry as such?
You are seeing sectors, especially in the PSUs. So when you're talking of the railway sectors, when you're talking of the BHELs of the world, more PSU driven, you are definitely seeing a very good and healthy promotion of Indian products, as long as the Indian product meets the technology requirement, which is what we've been upscaling and working towards a lot. And we have a lot of costs to undertake that. So you are seeing definitely improvements on that. You are seeing customers who know supply chain issues exist, private customers who see supply chain issues existing and are also looking at that. So we are definitely seeing an uptick in it. The question is, how long can it be sustained? And is the global supply chain situation changing drastic enough that there's lack of, you know, price disadvantage out of Asia or something like that? So I think we're seeing improvements on that. Definitely we are seeing improvements.
Got it. So secondly, on the synergy part, I understand you have mentioned that you cannot go into granular details in terms of quantification. But I'm sure that when the board has approved this merger, definitely they must have thought about what kind of savings will accrue.
Yes.
And what kind of improvement will come in, because it has come after so many years of denial with the previous management, and now things are changing on a positive side. So I'm not asking you to quantify specifically what kind of synergy benefit it will accrue, but if you can give some ballpark horizon in terms of with this merger, how things are going to change in terms of ESAB as a consolidated entity, in terms of size, in terms of competition as such, because ESAB is a single entity with both the businesses put together. So how that will change, and in some color, not necessarily specifically, but some broader range kind of benefit which can accrue with this merger. Maybe the direct cost saving, which is very much visible immediately, if you can give some color on that.
I can tell you, so I can answer you, but in a general manner. I can't answer you on a percentage basis or something, even though we've done a bit of the math, quite a lot of the math, I can't give you that exact thing, but I'll try and answer you in a very general perspective. I think, like you've seen with other companies also happening, and what we're expecting to happen with the Indian economy over the next 4 or 5 years, I think size and scale matters a lot. And how you manage your operational efficiencies matter. I don't really think that there's a lot of scope of improvement by using the correct distribution and sales force of both companies combined. I think there's a lot of talent that can be used, that can be better, more efficient by doing all of this. As I said, the capital, the back-end rejig in terms of manufacturing is something that's ongoing, and we need to have more clarity on that in the next few months. Sub's already doing it with EVAC. I don't want to comment any more on them. I mean, they're doing what they're doing correctly. So, and we're just trying to do it step by step. And there is definite opportunity for quite a lot of improvements there. I'm sorry I can't get into the specific math on it, but we definitely believe synergistic benefits to be very significant. It's a question of the timeline in which we do them.
Okay. And sir, in terms of what is currently the management vision to take this combined entity forward in, let's say, next 3 to 5 year horizon, is there any size or scale you have in mind which can work out as a target for you as a management for this combined entity, let's say 3 or 5 year down the line in terms of size?
So we closed this year as a combined unit at somewhere in the region of 880 crores, right? If we were to consolidate numbers across that, and ESAB is at approximately, the Colfax Group is approximately 900 plus another, I don't know what the private company's done, but I can guesstimate it. Yeah, I presume or something, I don't know. So that puts it 1150. I would say, and gives us at about 880, 900. I would say that, look, in the next 3 or 4 years, the inflationary factors played a large role. So I'm removing the effect of steel prices, because that's, you know, doesn't add anything per se. But I think you should be in the region of being able to grow the business at least a few basis points, 4 or 5 percentage points more than IIP. So whatever that leads you to in 3 or 4 or 5 years, that should be good. But I think the plan is definitely to be to significantly grow. It's not to you know, do this small rate of growth, and that's why we've combined it. It's to grow quite significantly. So, sorry, I'm giving you this vague answer, but there's a reason that I feel it's too premature to give anything different. Maybe at the AGM, I'll have something more.
Just two small things, sir, if I may. One, I missed your comment on the CAPEX side. If you can just reiterate what kind of capex you're looking this year?
Yeah, capex is being reevaluated from the merged entity perspectives from two schools of thought, or two different ways of looking at it. First is on the manufacturing scale rejig. Where should we be manufacturing? How should we consolidate? Where should we do all of that? What land banks make sense? Where costing makes sense? Where accessibility makes sense? That part of it is being undertaken. And the second is the capex that has to be undertaken on adding new technologies. And I expect our capex levels to go up, but I also expect, because of the rejig, that the net effect on the balance sheet not to be very significant.
Okay. And lastly, sir, on the now with the combined entity and with a stronger balance sheet, two parts of this question. One, do we see any further gaps in the product portfolio which we need to fill into to be really a complete value chain producer?
Well, yeah, definitely. There are gaps. There are gaps. There are gaps that do exist. I think so. They exist by virtue in the spectrum of welding automation. How much further up you can be in the automation scope rather than being in semi-automated scope. There are gaps in terms of a lot of imports that come into the country on certain products that our competitors might be better placed than we are. That gap part is not going to suddenly change because of this merger. You're going to have complementary stuff come in, but there's still gaps that remain that we have to keep plugging at for the next 3 years.
So are you open for inorganic growth to fill these gaps on that part?
Yeah, I think step by step, yeah.
Fine, sir. That's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Anurag Patel, you are now being unmuted. Kindly ask your questions.
Thank you for the opportunity. Sir, what will be the market size of welding equipment and consumable in India currently?
Last year, I think we normally used to guesstimate it anywhere in the region of approximately 5,000 plus minus a little bit here there, because first of all, it's a supply side estimation. It's a very tiny industry, so it's hard to figure out the exact numbers. I would say last year should have gone, I would say must be at least in the region of 7,500, at least must be 7,500, 8,000 maybe. Should be. No? Yeah, I think 7,500 might be a decent estimate of what we're looking at now, especially based on the inflationary factor of steel. But yeah, I would say it's somewhere in that region.
Okay. And sir, what percentage of our business is through distributors and through B2B segment?
65% of our business is through the distribution network, and the balance third is through direct sales.
Okay. And one last question. Earlier year, we have done some provisions for receivables. I think Kuwait related some outstanding was there. So can you elaborate what is the current status and any further provisions will be required there?
Sure. Just to basically the Kuwait project, as you all know, we explained at that time, was basically everything went, you had to write off most of the project or provide for most of the project. Everything went wrong. We filed a case against the contractor that we are working with. Case is ongoing in Kuwait. We are actually somewhat hopeful that in the next 12 to 15 months, maybe 18 months, we will see that money come back. So we're holding up. We've been tracking the case very closely. Suryakant visited Kuwait recently with a sense of confidence from there that, yeah, we should be able to see some progress in the next 12 to 15 months on that receivable.
And sir, how much is outstanding there in Kuwait?
15 crores, you put it. Approximately 15 crores. 15 crores.
Okay, sir. That's it from my side. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Samar Singh, you are now the unmuted. Kindly ask.
You're not on mute. You're on mute for some reason. Sorry.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Perfect. Go ahead.
Great. Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. Aditya, I'm not very familiar with Adore Welding, but if you could just explain to me, I believe the merger ratio is 9 shares of Adore Fontech will give me 1 share of Welding. Is that correct?
9.2.
Okay, so I'm just looking at the numbers. So Fontech and Welding have grown at the same rate over the last 5 years. The margins of Fontech are much better. The ROE of Fontech is better. But the ratio, the capitalization ratio for Fontech for this merger is 10 times earnings, while Welding is at 24 times earnings. So can you please help me understand how you're not shortchanging the Fontech investors?
Yeah,
Yeah, so I'll tell you what it is, okay? Because we've been getting a little bit of feedback on this, and I expect on Thursday a little bit more of answering a lot of these questions. I'll very openly tell you, look, valuation is something that could have been done very subjectively at either company, and we could have done it through various complicated structures and routes, which would have led to many debates. The easiest and the fairest way to do it, and I stand by that, and our advisors also gave it, is to look at the market price of what has happened. And we looked at the market price over 12 months, over 90 days, over 10 days, took all the data to our board, data our transaction advisors, and said, listen, I want to ensure corporate governance is correct. I don't want to do anything that is not perceived to be clean. We are very, very clear that this has to be done as transparently as possible. In my estimation, the market values, they're both publicly listed companies. No one knows the value of these companies better than the public markets. And that's exactly what we have followed. So whether I'm shortchanging one company or not shortchanging the other company is something that obviously I don't buy into, because first of all, I am a very, very large shareholder in Fontech as well. So I don't think shortchanging that would make sense in any way. So I think we must look at it as pragmatically as saying, look, the market valued these two companies over these extended periods of times like this. And whatever we did, we took it as for that. So I don't feel we shortchanged anything. Look, I'll give you the converse argument. And it's not because it affects it in any way. The thing is done.
ISAB's valuation today is 5x of Addo Welding's.
Someone from Addo Welding can turn around and say, what the hell, why didn't we look at that? So it's never ending. And why should I get into that debate? So I think the fair way to do it is to follow what the market has valued these two companies over this extended period of time. So I stand by that. So do our advisors. And I hope our shareholders from both sides will understand the rationale of that. And we've worked very hard to ensure that corporate governance is taken care of at the highest level. So I hope that answers your question, Samar.
Just two follow-ups on that. One is, what percentage do the minority shareholders have a voting right? Or is this transaction through and is it done?
Sorry, those through the minority normal voting rights, right? Yeah, as far as I know, it's a normal standard, right? The minorities will vote on the transaction rights and all of that, correct? As for the normal, whatever SEBI guidelines are, we'll follow.
They do not have any differential voting rights.
No.
And if the valuation of Adore Fontech goes up before the merger.
If the
valuation of Fontech, if the market value of Fontech goes up before the merger, will you then be open to changing the ratio?
How can I comment on that, Samarth? How do I know which one's going to go up and not go up? How do I answer that for you differently? You're presumably a Fontech shareholder. A welding guy will say, suppose the welding thing goes up tomorrow. I think we've taken advisors. We've taken very strong and good advisors for all of this. It's not like, guys, and we're trying to be as fair as possible. I cannot answer with which company should value will go up tomorrow or not. I work very actively with both. I don't think it's fair to do anything different to what the market has assumed over this extended period of time. They both, in my opinion, have a lot of room to do better. That's it. And I'm only saying that by looking at our biggest competitors. So what is undervalued and not undervalued is an art and subjective the way I look at it. And I don't think it's my place to comment on it because they're both publicly listed.
Fair enough. Thanks.
Get some follow-up questions because
subject. No, let them go order by order. If anyone has something on that, we can go anyway. Thursday will be all that.
You are being unmuted now. Kindly answer questions.
Yeah, hi. Am I audible?
Yeah.
Yeah, hi Aditya.
Hi.
A lot of the questions have been answered, but just on this, it seems that there is a definite gap between the product mix of us versus the competitors, and you've harped on that fairly significantly on this call. So just want to understand that a bit more deeply in terms of how much is the gap. The context of this question is also in a lot of the previous discussions, or whether it be analyst meets or even AGMs. One of the understanding was given that I'm talking about welding here, is that because there is a services component in ESAB, because of the parent and subsidiary angle there, that the margins are always higher. But if you strip it out and look at like to like, the margins for ESAB and Adore are very similar. And some of the historical numbers also sort of pointed towards that. However, my impression on this call, and correct me if I'm wrong, that there also seems to be a lot of gap and that in terms of product.
Let me correct you. You're right. The gap is not a lot.
It's not like they're in a very different basket. There's a lot of overlap.
There's a lot of overlap where at times we are priced better, they are priced better. I feel also that they can get margins in certain customers at a slightly better rate than we do. So I feel that is there. There's a lot of overlap. I would say it's 10-15% that is a slight gap, not more than that.
All right. So, understood. So you're saying that, okay, so I got it. I got my answer.
Understood. So maybe I miscommunicated earlier. Look, 80-90% of what we do, we compete with each other 1:1. There's a 10-15% gap that exists that has perceived value, I think, for them, has actual value for them. But that is not the answer to all our problems. There's also pricing. There's all of these things that we have to also do. So it's not like we can't narrow the gap by being smarter with what we have. Let me be very honest about that also.
Right. And just to understand again on the three segments today, and then obviously with Quantech coming in at some point of time. I mean, my understanding has been that consumables at a segmental level that you report could be a 14-15% margin business on a steady state, and equipments can also be around that number, probably even slightly higher. And flares is probably a single digit EBIT margin kind of business, the way you see it. Is that the right understanding? I mean, do you still hold by that? I mean, I'm not asking you timeline, but yeah. Is that the right way to think
about it? I don't know. I think so. I think equipment is just, I don't think equipment will get up to that level, a little bit lower than that level. But I think the rest of your assumptions are very in line with what we are planning.
All right. And I don't know if this is the right forum to ask, but probably on Fontech, do you want to comment, or probably you can take it on Thursday? I don't know.
I prefer to do it on Thursday and keep it sort of separate. I think that's only fair to both companies. So thank you.
Sure.
I'll take it on Thursday. Yeah, sure.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. Am I audible?
Yeah, go ahead.
Great. Sir, in your opening comments, you did mention that you're working a lot on the product mix to get the product mix better. And subsequently, you also mentioned that, the future capex that you would be looking at would be more on upgrading the technology. So, you know, just to understand or to appreciate this better, if you can broadly give an understanding about what are these product segments where you are trying to enrich the portfolio with, and which are these technologies which you're probably looking to bring in?
So they are what you call basically the higher efficiency production products that are used in the welding world. So if you ever see welding, if you see an image of it or a picture of it, and you see someone holding a stick and welding like that, that is just the lowest form of efficiency technically. And that then goes to continuous wires where you change over less. And there are fluxes and powders that come in, and there are technologies that combine the powder and fluxes and this and into a continuous line. This has been going on for some time. It's not something new. Hmm. Basically, you have higher productivity products that are there. Those for higher productivity products, we make quite a lot of them. But in my opinion, the opportunity to move higher efficiency in manufacturing those products, higher scale of manufacturing those products, and better quality or better input materials in that will lead to a higher yield is what we have to work on.
Mm-hmm. So this 15% product gap that we have with our competitor, will you be able to bridge that with these upgradation of the technology?
Step by step. Look, they're globally the biggest guys in the world. Yeah. So it takes step by step. It's not going to happen at the end of the day overnight. But step by step, there are various ways of doing it, and we will work towards it. There are some areas which are not even technology-driven product gaps. They could be just brand strength and stuff like that, which is a small part of it also. So it all depends the areas where you want to work on and not work on, and then take it forward accordingly. But I think step by step, there is enough that you can definitely reduce that gap down to at least a 7-8% sort of thing. Yeah.
Sure. And lastly, will that require you to collaborate with some with a technology partner to bridge this gap?
Potentially, yes. There are many ways you could do it through 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 alliances, and you can do it through a purchase of a technology or a licensing of a technology. So there are many ways, different ways that we are exploring.
Sure. Thanks. That's it from my side.
Thank you.
Hey, Manchita,
you are now being unmuted.
Can we ask your
questions?
Hi.
Hi, Vic. How are you? Hi, Aditya. I'm well. Thank you. First of all, thanks for actually having an analyst meet for both companies and for actually inviting shareholders in both companies to attend. And that's pretty fair and transparent on your part. I appreciate that. I've got 3 points. One is based on what you mentioned about Adore Welding and its future. You're looking at growing faster than IIP. So could you talk about how it has grown relative to IIP in the last 10 years? This is just for me. I'm getting acquainted with Adore Welding since last week, because we are aiming to do better. The second point is actually, I'll make detailed remarks about Adore Fontech actually on Thursday. So I think Samarth had some points. You mentioned that we rely on market valuation. Just to put it in perspective, the market cap of Adore Fontech is probably similar to what it was in 2011. And there was a time when our returns ratios were very high because we didn't have a lot of spare cash. And I think when management retains cash over and above what's needed for the business, generally for small companies, the PE drifts downwards. So that has been actually one reason behind the valuation differential. Another important thing is obviously that business is not as scalable. And that's another reason why a company can be cheaper. But I think both factors need to be considered because it's the management's cash retention policy, which has probably contributed to this to some extent. And the third point I wanted to mention, just with my years of investing, we have a very good opportunity here at Adore Welding, because in the listed space, our main competitor is trading at a very high valuation. And I think to get and to keep a very high PE, we have to up our operations in terms of margins and in terms of our capabilities. And just our reputation for governance to all stakeholders will always be looked at by the market. So this is something to consider. I think in our dealings, it's not only that we have to be fair, but sometimes we have to be perceived to be fair also. And those are two sometimes separate things, but both are important. But yeah. I really appreciate your transparency, and I enjoyed this investor presentation. And I wish this company all the very best. And
Thank you, Meg. I appreciate that. Okay, let me try and answer it as best possible. I was just going through your three questions and I'm not going to be able to answer them 100%. IIP growth, I don't have the last 10 years historical data, but if you were to look at it over the last year and a half, 2 years, we would definitely, our growth that we've been tracking very closely, especially last financial year, we're looking at consumables volume growth of approximately 30% and value growth of something like 45-48%. So I think that far outstrips the IIP percentage over there. But I've always believed that the welding industry has an elasticity factor over IIP. So because it on the up, when things are growing, it grows faster. On the down, when it's going, it has a slightly lower part. So you have to take it as per that. So you can't just say IIP is good enough. IIP is not good enough. You have to grow beyond that. But on the way down with IIP, you have to be a little bit careful to ensure that doesn't go much below. So that's the way I've looked at the industry. That's my homemade version of it, whether right or wrong. Valuation differential. Look, as I said, I'll comment on Fontech on Thursday. But all the factors you mentioned, Meg, are perceived reasons why one company is valued versus another. And at the end of the day, my sum and substance argument or counter to all of this will always be the market knows best. Who am I to comment if I'm retaining too much cash? Who am I to comment if we retained excessively? All I know is everything's very transparently put there. And if we had done that, there were so many subjective elements that would have come in that I think would have left and would have been more, about the promoters done what they want. And I don't think we've done that. I think we've tried to be as fair as I can. And I can't explain more than that. As I said, who's undervalued, who's overvalued is not my job to comment on. And I prefer to stay away from that argument and let the advisors tell us how to do it. Valuation multiples, I completely agree with you. Whether the competitor is undervalued or overvalued, again, not my job to comment on, but I do believe that there is a lot of work to be done so that exactly the operational efficiencies you mentioned need to come in. We've done a lot of work in the last year and a half. There's a lot more to be done, and it will come. It will come. That's exactly what we're striving towards, as I keep saying. I tell our teams internally that, look, someone out there in the market is worth five times of you, even though they only sell approximately 15-20% higher than you, and their EBITDA or their margins are approximately 12%, and we're at what, 7.5%, right?
We closed last year at 7.5%, and they were at 12%.
Yeah. And I said, sir, the market values them at 5x, and that's not okay. And I'm not here to comment why they should be worth 5x, but I definitely don't think the delta should be there, and that's what we have to operationally improve on. So that's what we're going to keep doing. You're right by that. So I don't want to comment on their numbers, but yeah, I think there's lying in front of us telling us here's what you need to do to improve. So I think that's what we have to do. But like I keep saying, look, you guys have to understand, we're a legacy company. We're a legacy group. We're a legacy company. We're a legacy brand. And it works differently when you're turning the ship. It doesn't happen overnight just because I said so. It has to be done in a lot of small ways, and which is what we're aiming towards. And a lot of what we did last year was about getting the balance sheet metrics correct, about cleaning up a lot of that stuff and getting certain verticals in line. So it has to all be done step by step. So that patience is something I need from everyone. Otherwise, I can't do it overnight.
Yeah. Aditya, there's actually a follow-up, and this it occurred to me during our during this presentation. Is there any reason we are doing the merger at this stage, given this degree of overlap? Was there a reason we didn't think of it about 4 or 5 years back?
I can't comment. I can only comment on the time that I have been driving welding, which is for the last year and a half. And it's been on my mind for a while to do it. And when the opportunity came, we decided to do it.
Sure. Good luck.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Mr. Amit Manwani, you are now being unmuted. Kindly ask your questions.
They're not there.
Repeat his name one more time.
Mr. Amit Anwani, kindly ask your question.
Yeah, hi, hello, am I audible?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, sir, one question on the Adar Fontech, if it is possible for you to comment. What kind of impact it will have on your market positioning post the merger? Anything on that? And will there be any base revenue impact post the merger on the joint entity?
There should not be any negative fallout to any operation, you know, any product line in any way. Should not.
Okay. And sir, can you you highlighted on your opening remarks on the online sales picking up a lot of traction in the international markets. If it is possible for you to highlight more on it, what kind of contribution it can have?
Yeah, so I can't project the numbers in terms of the contribution. All I can tell you is that, like, India had its B2C moment in terms of online. I think there's a lot of B2B moments happening. A lot of big corporates taking part in that and, you know, sort of facilitating faster transactions and all the benefits of being on an online portal. And we're working with a few of them. I can't quantify it right now, but we are seeing month on month, week on week traction picking up from there. It's a question of time and putting in and getting a structure. International, like I said, we want to see 35-40% growth happen year on year. So we've been very aggressive in our targets over there in that regard.
Okay. And can you highlight on the new product launches? So which side of the business will see more product launches or any thought on that?
Nothing very large. It'll just be a little bit of new product import substitution, new products, all of that. Bit of every, basically the welding consumables, a little bit on the welding equipment, and on the automation front. That's basically it. It'll keep coming in like that. Few. And when you talk of new products in our industry, you're not talking rocket science. You're talking of product upgradations most of the time, right? Or incremental differences. So it's primarily that.
Okay. Lastly, if you could share the volume numbers for FY22 and any guidance for FY23 for Adar Welding and Adar Fontech. Thank you.
Your volume in terms of quantity of products sold? I think we showed that in
tons.
Consumables, we sold about 50,000 metric tons last year. We manufactured and sold about 10,000 equipments last year. I think we showed it in the slides. So I don't do forecasts. I'm sorry. I just don't do forecasts. But like I said, as I explained to the earlier questions, it's all related to the growth numbers. But I can't do any forecasts. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Thanks.
We are taking one follow-up question. Mr. Shirun Prasad, you are now being unmuted. Kindly answer the question.
So I have a follow-up question. That can you just highlight on the market share that the company has across the segments? The market share in the industry.
The market share we have. So first, we have a little bit of this talk that goes on about organized and unorganized market and welding consumable space. And it's normally booked as a thumb rule 50-50. I tend to believe it's more 55 organized simply because the market has transitioned post GST and post scaling up and all of that more towards the organized. If you look at the organized market, I think we would be somewhere in the region of 15 to 20% market share. Maybe even in some segments of it, 12, some 18, something like that. I presume that's it. Somewhere, I think 15 would be a fairer number to put as an up down on that rather than 20. I think 20 might be a bit too high. On the equipment front, like I said, the imports are huge, they're massive, but we still would have somewhere in the region of 5%, 6% market share in that regard. That's my estimation, again, supply side estimation. So.
Okay, and so one more question that, as you mentioned that your oil and gas revenue contribution is 6 to 7%. So I just want to ask that, has it been historically low from this sector or in the recent past?
You will have years where it's very good. So if you have, like, for example, companies in Gujarat that did massive expansion 4-5 years ago, then that year you'll see a big jump. Like I said, it's expansion related. You have stagnant work that carries on, and once you have massive refinery expansion work going on, that year it jumps. So it depends on that side.
Okay, so your revenue contribution from oil and gas can jump?
Yes, it can. And it's actually a good value mix as well. So when they're doing massive refinery work or something like that, it's always good.
Any guidance on how much up the revenue can go in the oil and gas? Any
I don't do any guidance on anything. So I'm sorry. I can't.
Because in the last manufacturing cycle, if we see your annual report from fiscal year 2004 to 2007, there has been a lot of mentioning of oil and gas capex. So I just want to ask that it can be this time also like that?
Yeah, it could be. It all depends on what sort of drivers are there for the capex, definitely. In fact, in the Middle East, we should see a good fetish on that because there seems to be a lot of capex driven over there. So, yes.
Any early signs are you seeing on that?
Sorry?
Any early signs on the oil and gas capex demand?
Nothing very significant at the moment, but there's a lot of talk. Nothing very significant.
Okay. Thank you so much. All the best.
Thank you. Done? Okay. Perfect. Thank you, guys. Thank you, everyone, for their time. Thank you very much. All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Chalo, close. What is the chat?